Hello, everyone. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio and our Shabbat program. It's good to be with you. I'm assuming, Larry, that's you in the 904 area code.
Yeah, that's me. That's
Hello.
Me, no doubt about
Larry,
it.
I may have JB. If we do, I don't know which line he is on, but JB knows how to work the switchboard. A little melancholy here today. You probably are as well, Larry. I thought last week was a great celebration of what we can learn from the Torah, a great place where what we came to understand based upon a thorough digestion of the information that was provided and what was good and not good for us to eat was affirmed when Yahweh said, you know, when so long as you're thoughtful about it, and I want you to pay attention to all of my instructions, but there's one exception. You can eat whatever you want to eat so long as you're thoughtful about it. And yet, boy, there was hell to pay for sharing that, by the way, which was written in the Torah.
Yeah, you know, it's an odd situation. It's where we find ourselves. You know, it's what I've said over and over. If people think that Yahweh is a religious deity, now here's a being that tells me not to fear him. So, you know, I've got nothing
Relax
to fear.
Around
he wants
it.
To be welcomed as an individual.
Approach him. Walk to him. Don't bow down near him. Everything that would indicate to you. He wants us to approach him and be comfortable in his presence. Right?
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, I went into reading, just because of this, I went into a little study here about a woman in her period.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's supposed to be outside in the tent for 7 days.
Yeah.
So she is set apart. I get that. They're telling us she is set apart.
Yeah.
And we're staying away from the blood again.
Yeah.
And by the way, you can't touch her for 7 days since you're obeying right. the Torah. You really can't. I mean, she shouldn't be in your home, and you cannot touch her, not even give her a hug and say, "Are you okay?"
Right.
Because that's what's in the Torah.
Right.
And you know, sadly, there's a group of people who cannot they can't. Separate shamar from obey. These people
so
are.
So how do
you
today? Let's say that your wife once a month is having her period. Are you going to kick her out of the house and have her live in a tent to be Torah observant?
No, I can.
Okay, to be Torah observant.
I don't think that's going over very well at all.
No, it's not going to go over. Hi, James. If I'm driving down the street and I see a gardening crew. That is working on the Shabbat, and somebody in that crew picks up some sticks that somebody has cut pruned from a tree. Should I have a handy bag of stones in my car, stop my car and stone them to death?
Kill them. Yeah, no. You know, I'm overwhelmed that people could understand that it's breathtakingly ignorant. Let me just put it to you like this. Here you are understanding the Torah, understanding it,
mm-hmm.
not doing mindless rituals, understanding it,
mm-hmm.
and that isn't good enough. Well, let me tell you something, folks. If that's not good enough, you ain't going to make it.
I would like to ask. I'd like to ask those who are fixated on doing
Torah.
Rather than and obeying rather than thinking. How many of you on Passover brought a live lamb into your home 4 days before Passover to let it live with the family? How many of you slaughtered your own lamb? How many took the leftovers of the lamb and built a fire and incinerated it?
I didn't. Actually, I did make sure there was none left.
We do that with the leftover bones and stuff. We let the kids throw them on the grill with the fire.
Yeah, that's a good
teaching and stuff.
Yeah, it's a teaching tool. I guess it's a good idea. You probably could not incinerate it all, even on the fire, but you certainly got the symbolism.
My fires don't burn that hot.
Right, which is still instructional.
Yeah, it's important to know that the physical body didn't rise, and it was never spoken of again after it was wrapped up.
Yeah. Any of you ever turn on your stove or your oven on a Shabbat to cook something for your family?
I turn it on to have my coffee first thing in the morning every morning.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm going to tell you that, to me, it struck me that it was sort of like, you know, I have a... I'm not good with authority. You know, so, Larry, I'm going to just lay it right out there to say that you and I, neither one, get along with authority. JB, I'm not sure what your stand is on authority, but I know Larry and I don't like authority. Let me give you an example. We're driving our car, and we're driving it in Montana. And it's a two-lane highway in both directions, and it just goes on forever. And there's a old beat-up, old traffic sign that says, speed limit 25, road under construction. And on this magnificent highway, you're looking at it and say, wait a minute, the construction's all done. This highway is in perfect shape. That sign is there, yeah. I'm sure there might have been a time where we had to drive at 25, but, you know, the highway is in perfect shape. I could go 85 on this highway and be perfectly safe so long as I was paying attention to what I was doing. And then you come up to another sign, and it said, pertaining to the original sign, so long as you're thoughtful and safe about it, you are free to drive at whatever speed is appropriate. And you say, you know, that old sign, it said 25, and this one doesn't designate a speed limit. So you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to go ahead and limp along here at 25 miles an hour, even though I've been told I can go faster. What's really the difference between that and the passage we read? Pardon?
I'm not going to do it. And by the way, I don't just see this as somebody saying, you're an abomination, which I've been told I am now by some real lovely people that, by the way, last year in this same debate, took the other side. I guess they flip-flop depending on where they see weakness or what they perceive as weakness. Well, I'm going to tell you, this isn't weakness. The fight we have is that Yahweh is not a religious deity. I had a debate this week with a rabbi,
mm-hmm.
and he can speak fluent Aramaic, the Babylonian language of commerce.
Right. Yep.
And
good for him.
He told me it's Yeshua, and Yeshua was an Orthodox rabbi.
Oh.
Now, I'm going to tell you where I told him he could shove that. Well, you can imagine.
Yeah. Okay.
I told him
where he should shove it. He's not a member of the covenant family, and he can go to hell, and he'll find lots of rabbinic company there.
Yes, he will. And I told him he was so ignorant that it wasn't really worth me wasting words on him, but I will share Yahusha's words.
Yeah, by the way, what is kind of interesting is that Yahusha said, don't, and by the way, it is written 220 times as Yahusha. It is never once written Yeshua. It is twice written Yahushua. And the two times that it's written Yahushua, it means Yahweh cries out. And the 220 times it is written Yahusha, it means Yahweh saves. It is never once written Yeshua. So, you know, there's 222 times. So evidently his God can't spell, or his rabbinical teachers can't read, one of the two.
And they collectively can't think, because in Malachi it says he's awesome on the present, on account of the presence of my name, which would be Yahweh.
And
you know,
and by the way, didn't Yahusha say, "Don't call anyone rabbi, for only the Father"?
Yeah, I did put that up for him. I did put that up for him.
By the way, he was talking about himself as well, because he's not the Father.
Yeah, he pointed to the Father. Yep, sure
yeah,
did.
Yeah. All right. Listen, you shared with me some of the debate, and I have to tell you that I was disappointed to hear the approach that was being used. I don't have a problem with somebody saying, listen, we understand that that was a you can eat what you want, so as you're thoughtful, and that was from the Torah. We understand that. And we understand there's two places in the Torah that delineate what is good and what's not good for you to eat. And therefore, in all due caution, and because we enjoy this as part of our relationship with the covenant, we're still not going to eat anything that's got pork in it. And we're not going to eat lobster. We're not going to eat shrimp. And by the way, not eating pork is really tough because pork products are in so many different products. I mean, you are really going to have to be diligent to eliminate all pork. But if that makes you happy, so I don't have a problem with that. And that's why I didn't enter the debate. I don't care if you choose to say in an abundance of caution and because I personally enjoy it, I'm not going to impose my view on other people. You can do that. And if you notice, I don't impose my understanding on anybody either. I don't say, this is the way it is. There's only one way to view this. And if you don't view it this way, you're a nutcase. I don't say that. I say I enjoy studying what he has to say, and I will share with people what I think that means. I've been wrong in the past. Don't claim to be the authority, but I enjoy translating it and talking about it. And if nothing else, those on the I'm never going to let pork touch my lips side, if nothing else, they got another point of view. And that's why I chose not to engage. Now, there is one part.
The problem with the point of view was it came right out as an attack. It was what I find midgets
do. Yeah,
no,
that's the problem I have,
character.
Larry. And let me finish my statement, and then I'd love to get your input.
Okay.
The problem that I have is that when I see someone write, the Church of Yada is the Church of Yada, or the Church of Yada Light, or some reference to me founding a religious institution based upon these translations and conclusions. And frankly, I don't need that aggravation. I don't mind if some idiot out there who is a Muslim threatens to kill me. It doesn't bother me at all. But somebody who has benefited from these translations and these discussions, who then chooses to assail me by saying that anybody who concurs with what I have said is a part of my church. To tell you the truth, it pisses me off. It deflates.
Yeah, well,
it,
there
it,
you go.
It says, why am I doing this? I've already done a radio show today. Why am I doing this? And so that's the part of it that causes me to be melancholy. Now, if, and James, you've been a little bit quiet on this. I know Larry's point of view. Am I being selfish here? Am I being too thin-skinned? You and I have a disagreement on the day of Pesach. I have read your arguments in favor of Pesach. You've considered mine. We've exchanged them. We've had some lovely discussions on it. I have a different conclusion than you have. I have never said your conclusion is wrong. I've never said mine is right.
Mm-hmm.
All the way through, in fact, I think our relationship is better, even though we do have a difference on that. I'm not sure. I don't know of anything else we have a difference on, so I'm just using the day of Pesach, the 13th or the 14th day of the month, when the 13th and the 14th day occur, and the timing of it. And you have some really good arguments. I'm more comfortable with what I've previously concluded, but I enjoyed hearing your arguments. But at no time did you say, by not agreeing with you that I was being religious.
Yeah. We had a very intellectual, fun discussion, and we came out with two different conclusions, and everything's fine.
Yes. We don't disagree on the purpose of Pesach. We don't disagree that the relation between Pesach and matzah. It's just when do we slaughter the lamb and when do we dine on the lamb, and that's the only difference. And I'm trying to understand it also in context with Yosha's fulfillment of it. And it's that adds an interesting influx, because he had to be he had Pesach with his disciples, and then he that same day, but later that day, what we would call tomorrow, he was sacrificed as the sacrificial lamb. So it adds, you know, kind of an interesting twist to understanding the whole thing. So, you know, that's part of trying to come to grips with it. And you know, dinners are typically at night. So, you know, it would be after sundown. But if after sundown on the 14th, it's actually the 15th on the Hebrew calendar. So, you know, I understand that there's not only room for different interpretations. I think that the way that Yahweh conveyed this Dabarim 12 thing, which it says, so long as you're thoughtful about it, you can eat whatever pleases you, is that so long that I think Yahweh has written what he conveyed, James, about the timing of Pesach, when we slaughter the lamb and when we dine, and then the beginning of Matzah and Bikurim, in such a way that it was possible to investigate the evidence that he has provided, to think about it, and to come to slightly different conclusions one day versus the next day. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's something that Yahweh is encouraging. I think exactly what he's encouraging here on the food. He said, I gave you instructions.
It makes it impossible to be dogmatic. It makes it impossible to be religious about it.
Correct. You can't be I'm going to not use the term religious, because that's too incendiary in this company. I'm going to use the term dogmatic. It precludes you from being dogmatic. One of the things that I like about not being able to be absolutely certain when we celebrate Pesach, and you're never off by more than one day, is that by not being able to be absolutely certain, particularly having a disagreement with somebody that does their homework, that is very bright, that I respect, like you, James, it precludes me, should I have the tendency to say I'm right and other people are wrong, it precludes me from being able to say that. I don't have that proclivity. I'm fully willing to admit that I don't want to be relied on as being a perfect exemplar or exemplar or explainer. I don't ever want that. But should somebody move to the position where they want to say I'm right and other people are wrong, and boy, there's lots of those in this world, Yahweh's instructions preclude that. The way that he has stated it precludes being dogmatic and claiming that you're right and other people are wrong. I think that's a good thing. Now, I think this whole instruction on food, listen, I think Yahweh was aware that the easiest thing of all, by far, the easiest thing of all to be dogmatic about was pork. The rest of the list, you know, there's words in there and animals in there, animals that don't even exist, and the terminology is in there such that, you know, most of it you can scratch your head and say, not really sure. Can't be dogmatic about that. But you can be dogmatic about pork. I don't think God likes people being dogmatic. He wants people to be thoughtful. He doesn't want anybody saying that they're absolutely right and other people are wrong. And so the whole reason that he says, you know, the only one of those animals that is actually filthy dirty is the pig. You know, catfish aren't dirty. Lobsters aren't dirty. Shellfish aren't dirty. The only one that's really dirty, unclean, is the pig. And he says, you know, so long as you're thoughtful about it and you have a high regard for Yahweh, you can eat whatever you like. And you can eat that which is unclean, which would be specific of the pig. Now, I think that's by design. That is the place rabbinic Judaism emerged from kosher. Not Kodesh, but kosher, where they said the Torah is not explicit on how to eat and what to eat. It's not explicit, and therefore the oral law is required so that people know what to do in regard to food. And that's where that's the genesis of rabbinic Judaism. And what this does, by saying, so long as you're thoughtful, you can eat.
Perfect thing right out the window there.
Right. It just absolutely destroys the basis of rabbinic Judaism. Now, there's also one other thing I want to talk about, and I don't want to do this show on the foodie. We did an entire show about a month ago on food. I went into it with great trepidation because this is a lightning rod subject, and I came out of it feeling great about it because we learned so much from the experience. And I thought that last week was great until I got so much antagonism. And again, don't care if you disagree. If you've got a thoughtful disagreement, don't care. Just don't lace your disagreements with labels and be careful of the terminology that you use.
Like anything, it's all about how you approach the discussion, whether you're doing it on an intellectual basis of, you know, I view it this way, you view it that way, here's why I view it this way. Yeah, that,
yes.
You know, I have no problem. I love having those kind of discussions with people. When
right.
they start jumping in, well, you're wrong because this, and this, and you're just stupid. Yeah, that,
right.
I'm out. I just walk away at that point.
I chose not to engage. I read the opening parts of all of these.
For the sake of the readers. But.
Right, I just walked away. That's there is no benefit in doing any of that sort of thing. And so, you know, as I look at what Yahweh provided, it was, all right, I've given you, the body aim is all about summations. I've given you a lot of instructions. And he reemphasizes the mitzvah and the choke are really important. The choke is what I've inscribed, what I've cut into stone that cuts you into the relationship, and the mizpat are the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, which would be the path we walk to Yahweh through Pesach all the way to Sukkah. And then he says, I'm going to make one exception for you, and the one exception is, so long as you're thoughtful about it, you can eat that which is clean and unclean. And to me, what it did is just reemphasize that Yahweh wants us to be thoughtful, that the Torah is filled with instruction and guidance. The instruction and guidance that he has provided is valuable, it's pertinent, useful, has great merit. If we follow his guidance, we're better off. But I don't want anybody to think that if pork has never touched your lips, that Yahweh loves you more than somebody who will have pepperoni on their pizza. It just ain't so. It just ain't so. And the instructions on food don't make his top 10 list. They don't make even Dode's 176 verses and statements regarding the Torah. Not a single mention. And I think that it's just way too much dogma and therefore not productive. So my view is feel free to disagree. Be thoughtful about it. Learn, grow, and let's not argue in a hostile fashion, and please avoid applying labels. That's, you want to apply a label to a Muslim, to a Christian, fine, to a rabbinic Jew, fine. Don't apply labels to family members. Not the least bit conducive. All right. What I'd like to do, Larry, now you've been quiet for a while. Do you have anything you'd like to add? Are you comfortable with where we are on this?
No, I want to add one other thing. and this is something I know from having been in business for years. You know, I've got a lot of business credentials. I really do. And I know midgets. And I'll tell you what midgets do. Midgets jump on everything they can, and they pound it with a ball bat. And midgets are not the kind of people I want to be around for all eternity. And I want to make that clear to the people that were attacking me with the Church of Yada Light. So you set on that, guys, because I never want to speak to any of you again.
Yeah,
straight
and I'm going to take a little softer approach. Well,
yeah, you probably would,
okay.
But I won't.
Yeah,
I hope I
little
never see
up.
One of them.
Yeah. The attack was not on you. The attack was on me.
No, it was on me. They made it clear.
Yeah.
They made it clear.
What name do I use in all of these books?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so the Church of Yada is a church that's associated with me. I don't appreciate that.
Well, I was just your yes man. I'm your yes man. I want to be clear about this. The fight we always have, and I've said this 100 times, is that, get this, write it down, Yahweh is not a religious deity. He is not a religious deity.
He's not into dogma or ritual or dogma and ritual is the, or people claiming to be right. Just relax and grow up. It's really not a good idea to apply labels. And to apply a label that we all know is disgusting, church. God does not have a church. We know it is a disgusting pagan name, a disgusting corrupt human institution. You know, please, just don't do that. That it is hurtful, harmful, counterproductive, and it's not even an argument. It's
let's just all be rational individuals.
Yeah.
Hello?
But, all right, we've got William on the line. William, you're one that wrote me on this because, and I responded, I wrote you a reply. What are your thoughts, William?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I was concerned about the food aspect of it. I was more digging into the translation side and whether that was right or wrong. And, as far as me, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be on the phone with you right now if I never did that. So,
right.
You know, I see nothing wrong with questioning, you know, whether the translation is accurate or not. And so,
oh, I have no problem.
I can't. Yeah, and I actually posted that. I said that you would encourage us to do that.
Absolutely.
Because you know, and it's not that you're not trustworthy. You are, but you know, you're a man.
I'm fallible.
We all make mistakes.
Yeah.
So,
not only am I fallible, but beyond the fact that you ought to not trust any individual, and I'm fallible. Beyond that, one of the most rewarding things that a person can do is to study Yahweh's testimony on their own. Now, the one thing that I did not do in that particular passage, because I did it audibly, not in writing, was it's probably the only passage that I've actually shared with people that I allowed to have posted elsewhere without commentary. And the reason I say that is that with many words, there are many potential definitions. Now, it was a week ago that I did this, so I'm not familiar with any place where there were many definitions to choose from. But with most Hebrew words, there are options. And what I do in the translations that I actually put in the books is if a word was a challenge to translate, if there were options on translating, I try to be transparent. I try to tell people, well, here are the options. Here's the basis for this word. Here's the first time the word was used. Here's how I came to choose this translation over another translation. So people know that there are options. I did not do that on that particular text because, A, it takes more time to write the commentary than it does to translate it. And as I think everybody knows from last week, I shared the text within a minute or two of the show beginning. So I was just in the process of translating.
Right.
Anyway, so
did you
check the translations? Did you find a place where your translation was inconsistent with the one that I shared a week ago?
Sadly, I'm not as intelligent as you, so I'm still going through the process.
Oh, okay. Okay. It's not about intelligence. It's really about a desire to do it, and I think it was. Was Kirk about a week ago that was talking about, you know, this thought process that, you know, translations might be fast and easy for me and it takes other people longer. I'm going to tell you, I'm slow as it can be and I'm very methodical on it and I have no special talents whatsoever in this. So don't ever discount yourself. No one should discount themselves in this process.
Right, and you know, I never said you were wrong or right. I just asked you a question about it. And as far as the young lady who posted an FB, and you know, she kind of started off her stanza with, "Hey, this is going to open a can of worms," or something to that effect. You know, like it's basically going to cause a tsunami, if you will. And so, but I think it kind of evolved into what Larry's talking about, where, you know, it went into the food thing. And but I think she, you know, and I wish she would call in and speak for herself, because I don't want to, you know, interpret her feelings for her. But I want to say that she was basically just asking if the translations were right or wrong as well. I don't know if.
Yeah, and by the way, and that's something you ought not ask in that kind of a forum. Mm-hmm. What you ought to do is check it yourself.
Right.
And if you're willing to check it yourself, that's just fine. You know, feel free to check it yourself. Don't ask somebody, are the translations right or wrong? You know, and if you check it yourself and you find that you think they are inaccurate, the thing that I've always asked is that you share your concerns. Like, for example, James has probably found 20 places, particularly when he was really active doing translation, where my translations were different than what he came up with. And we walked through the various routes and the reasons for various choices and where the information came from. And sometimes it's, you know, maybe your version is a little more accurate than mine. And much of the time we said, yeah, now I says, I appreciate you walking me through that. Now I understand how you got there. So that is really the appropriate thing to do. If you think, hey, you know, I think you misled folks because your translation wasn't right. Here's my take on the translation, and you share that with me. You know, the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to open up all the resources again. I'm going to go right back through the material again. And I'll do it openly with that individual. And if they're right, then, you know, the first thing I'll do is begin the next program by saying, oops, folks, made a mistake. I think this is what a proper translation, and it was directed, this insight was provided by ABC or a certain individual. Didn't get one of those.
Yet the biggest thing we fight is religion. And I saw that as Yahweh taking a slap at religion. Just as he said to pour the blood out on the ground, just as he says not to get near my blood, you know, because Christians are always, they're bathed in the blood, aren't they? I mean, isn't that their whole thing?
Right. Yeah, they drink the blood every Sunday
with gusto.
Eucharist.
Yeah,
with Eucharist. Let me just go through Debatim 12, 14, and 15. I haven't done this in a week. I did not put as much diligence into each word as I would if I was publishing a book. Somebody sent me this. I don't know who it was, and a reference to this passage. And as you know, I translated it in the 3 or 4 hours prior to the show. Okay, 14. Debatim 12:14. Indeed, this is key. One of the most common Hebrew words. It means surely, truly. It can mean rather and instead, but it almost always means, if you translate KY as indeed or surely, truly, which is what indeed means, you'll be right 99% of the time. It's a marker of emphasis that indicates something is accurate. The next word is a challenge, I will tell you, because it is usually a conditional word, you know, like if, an if-then statement, but it can be translated whenever, and so M is a word that I translated as whenever, as do most translators in this particular place, even though it's normally a condition, and I put after M as a condition and as often as, which are the other meanings of M. In the place, Baha Makum. Makum means place. That's just what Makum means. It's a place that direction comes from. It's a place that is a source of information, and it is related, therefore, to Kum, which means to stand. So it's a standing place, a place to stand upright. So in the, indeed, whenever, in the place, which beneficially. Asher. Asher means which, beneficially or relationally, whichever you prefer, or both. Asher, Yahweh, chooses, Bachar, selects and prefers. This was written in the Call Imperfect. I don't think there's anybody that would question that Bachar means selects, prefers, desires. Call means genuinely imperfect on an ongoing basis. For one of your related family groups. Now, this one, the primary translation of Ba-Achad Shabbat. Ba means in or with or for. Ichad means one. Shabbat is often translated tribe, but tribe is just not a word that is comfortable today. We don't think of tribes. Now, in Yisrael, there are 12 families, 12 related groups, each related to one of the descendants of Jacob. But we just, and I know there is this, because of the way that the Hebrew has been translated, actually the way that Hebrew is translated to Greek and then Greek into Latin and then Latin into English, there is this tendency to translate Shabbat as tribe. It is a related family group. I chose to translate as related family group because it's the descendants of Jacob is what's being talked about here. And Shabbat also can mean, by the way, branch or offshoot. For a certain one of your tribes, branches or offshoots, was in the print inside the parentheses, there. There, Shem means there. Shem can also, if it's vocalized differently, can be name. You should meet, grow up, become acceptable, and ascend. Now this, I'm going to tell you, is Allah Allah. And if I was writing commentary, and I think I spoke about this in the during our discussion. And, you know, I'm going through this again so that we can determine whether or not there are other variations for translation. Allah Allah is one of those places. It can be vocalized differently. Same letters, vocalized differently and as O-L, and it is usually written, burnt, rendered burnt offering. And so when these words, Allah, Allah, and this is, by the way, Allah, not as in Allah. It's written with the, not with the Aleph, but with the Ain. And so it's not the Allah that, you know, we think of the boastful God, wannabe God of Islam. This is Allah written with the Ain and not the Aleph. It's the Aleph in Arabic for Allah, the God. But Allah, Allah, Allah means to meet, to grow up, to become acceptable, to ascend. It also means to follow, to visit, to withdraw, to rise, to be taken away. And the reason that Olah is defined as a burnt offering is because the smoke of a burnt offering rises, and Olah is based on the verbal root Allah. And so we have the word repeated, which means we're emphasizing geometrically the meaning of the word. And so, as I explained during the program last week, most people will translate this as there, you should make a burnt offering by fire. And it was Allah, Allah, and I had these options. I could go to the root of the word and say you should meet, you should grow up, you should become acceptable, and an ascend made more sense to me than burnt offering by fire. But you need to know, most translators would disagree with me, and for the very reasons I've stated. So there, you should act upon, this is Asha. Now, Asha can be translated simply as do. It can be engage in, act upon, benefit from, profit by, any one of gain from, any of those concepts are a proper translation of Asha. Now, I have done whole programs on Asha because The reason we went and turned back to the 190th Psalm was that somebody wrote Larry and said, you know, there are places in the 109th Psalm that tell us there are things we have to do. And therefore, they equated do with obey.
Yeah, it was obey, like, and he had it
right
down there, you know, 67
right, right
times or something.
Yeah, that's right.
About,
and so
yeah.
I said, all right, I will go through. And, you know, a concern was conveyed to me by Larry. And as Larry's yes man, I devoted about 3 days of my time to studying this. And what I found is that there were six or seven times that a shah could be found in the 190th Psalm. And that the first two times, because we went all through this, I mean, all the archives are there, the first two times it's in Yahweh's voice. He's the one acting, not us. And the times that it is us acting, it's us responding, it's Dod responding to the terms and conditions of Yahweh's covenant. And we went all the way through all of the options with Asha. My research, and I've spent a lot of time with this word. Glenn, I'm not claiming to be right. I'm not dogmatic. I'm just telling you that here's all the things it can mean. It can mean to do, to benefit from, to profit from, to act upon and engage in. Having translated this word many hundreds, if not a thousand times, I have found that if I render it act upon or engage in, no matter who is the speaker, whether it's man or God, that it flows beautifully and it makes absolute sense and is consistent with Yahweh's testimony. So I render it here as you should act upon. And then the next word is everything which beneficially, it's kol ashar. Kol means all or everything. Which beneficially, asher, or relationally, I have instructed. Okay? Instructed. This is shawa. Shawa means to instruct. It means to guide. It means to provide direction. That's what shawa means. And shawa is a beautiful term to use in conjunction with the Torah because its meaning is very similar to Torah. You know, in fact, it would be hard to find a verb other than yashar that is more in keeping with the meaning of Torah than shawa. All right. So that's the statement that precedes it, which is 12:14. The reason we had to go there, William, is that the next word is accept. And so unless you knew what preceded it, you don't know what accept is applying to. So it's everything that that Yahweh has taught us beneficially, except this is rock. Rock means however, noting this exclusive, singular, and unique instance as an exception. That's what rock means. I mean, I'm going to convey the entire meaning of rock, except, however, denoting this exclusive, singular, and unique instance as an exception. Now, that's a really interesting term right here. That means that something that Yahweh has taught us in the Torah is going to be different, is an exception. We need to treat one thing and one thing alone that's in the Torah differently, except with, ba. Ba means with or in. Every, kol, all. Now, the next word is Aowah. A-O-W, so it's A-W-H in Hebrew. And the primary meaning of the word is sign. But it's a sign that is there to not only point something out, but to show a will or desire. So, for example, the circumcision in the covenant is a sign, right? And the terms and conditions of the covenant express Yahweh's desire for us. So circumcision would be a sign that points something out, denoting a desire. So this is a sign that points something out that denotes a desire, a measure and depiction which denotes a preference for being called out, means being differentiated, and being marked. Being marked means in the Hebrew there is this concept, I don't very often translate it this way, but there's a concept of branding in Hebrew. You bear somebody's mark is what it means. You know, like, you know, you brand a, this is a, it's a crude comparison here, but, you know, you brand a cow to tell people that cow is part of your herd. Well, Yahweh brands us with his name. Now, it's not the painful, searing kind of brand. He doesn't own us, but it's good for us to be associated with his name. He applies his name to us. That's the kind of branding. We are marked out as his. And so this word talks about being marked out, being marked and called out as different based upon a sign that has been used to convey something apart, important, that sets us apart based upon a fondness and a desirable, pleasing yearning. This yearning now, as this word eowah means, speaks of yearnings which are highly pleasing, desirable, beneficial, nurturing. And this is the good part of yearning. Now, we can yearn for things that aren't so meritorious, or you can yearn for things that are like a closer relationship with Yahweh. This is yearning in the most positive sense of the word. Okay, so accept with every sign that points something out, denoting a desire. So the exception generally then would be anything that helps, that's a sign that helps us better understand, better appreciate Yahweh's will for us, and that it helps us better understand who he is and what he wants. Your soul, so if it's a desire of your soul, in this particular case, it's our desire. So if the desire of our unique soul, of our soul, our unique individual consciousness, nephesh, I don't think anybody's going to challenge the definition there of nephesh. You may actually and continually butcher. Zabak means to butcher or to sacrifice. It means to, not to sacrifice, to slaughter. You know, when zabak is presented when an animal is to be killed for the express purpose of consuming it as food. You know, I have on my farm in Charlottesville, I have two of my associates there that hunt with bows and arrows. They hunt too because they love venison. It is their primary meat. And every animal they kill, my deal with them is, they can hunt with their bows and arrow on the property so long as we know they're there, so long as they don't invite anybody else there, so long as they sign a waiver of release of liability, and so long as they never take a shot that they aren't certain that within that range and the clearing that A, no one else is going to get hurt, and B, they're going to take down that animal immediately, and they are prepared to end that animal's suffering immediately, and that they personally butcher the animal and consume the meat. It can't be for fun. It has to be for food. And they, back in our farm, they'll hang the animal up. They will slit its throat. They'll let the blood drain after they've killed the animal. And they will then butcher that animal and cut up the cuts of meat from that animal, preparing it for cooking and consumption. That's what this word means. So you may actually and continually butcher. And you know, butcher is not it. You know, we live in such a genteel world where we go and buy our New York strip. We buy our lamb chops, and we don't think of those lamb chops, of that New York strip being part of an animal, that animal had to be killed, and then that animal had to be butchered so that it was there for us to purchase. But that's what goes on. And Yana was talking about what goes on. So you can butcher. And also, you may choose to completely consume. A call means to eat. And it was written in the call perfect consecutive. Guys, you all know what the call conveys, right?
Yeah.
Hearing noise
yeah.
in the background,
yeah,
call means genuinely, literally. I'm not conveying a symbolic meaning here. You can literally eat. Okay, that's call. It was written in the perfect. What does the perfect mean?
That means ongoing.
No, it's the imperfect. It means ongoing. The perfect means
there is a time.
There is a time when you can do this.
Limit, yeah.
It's time sensitive, time limited. Now that time does not mean that it's in the past would make no sense here because this is an exception to a teaching that that Moshe is sharing in the Torah. So it can't be about something in the past. It has to be about a time. So there is a time, a segment of time. And by the way, that time, let's say there's 6,000 years of the era of man. If it was 5,995 of those years, it'd be written in the perfect. If it isn't ongoing and then continues throughout all eternity, it can't be written in the imperfect. So do not think, for example, that it's written in the perfect means that one time you can do it. It doesn't mean that there's only a period of, 20 years amongst the 6,000 years you can do it. It's not that limiting. It just means this is something that is not going to occur forever. Now, I was particularly pleased that it was written in the perfect. And I don't know if I conveyed this effectively during the program, but having it written the perfect absolutely gave me goosebumps.
Yeah, and that's what I meant by that. When I say ongoing, it's something that's, you would have to be ongoing limitlessly. It would have to be written that way, but it wasn't.
No,
it was written as
perfect. Now, let me explain why I was so excited about that. I have shared with the listeners of this program that of the 6,000 years of mankind apart from the garden, there's 6,000 years between the garden and the garden. And that 6,000 years between the garden and the garden, all but about 50 of those years, everything on Yahweh's list was dangerous to eat. It should not be considered food. It could kill you. And the instruction was valid for 5,950 years by saying, this is not food. You should not eat this. This over here, this is good for you to eat. And for 5,950 of the 6,000 years that mankind has been apart from the garden, eating pork, for example, was dangerous. In the last 50 years, eating pork is still more risky than eating lamb or beef, but it is hugely less than it previously was. So there's a 50-year period of time where it's okay. Now, from a food safety point of view. But the other thing that struck me was because this is in the perfect, it resolves the biggest issue that I had with Yosha's statements. There's only one statement that Yosha made, and it's recorded in two of the texts, I think, Mark and Luke. Now, Luke I would typically just discount, but it's in Mark as well, and Mark, is somehow, although Mark's got a lot of things wrong, it's indirectly linked to Shimon Kepesh, because Mark was his translator. Now, it says in both of those two places that Yosha told them to eat, his disciples, eat whatever's put before you. Just eat, eat what's ever put before you. And without this statement in the Devarim, he's contradicting the Torah. But with this statement in Devarim, he's not. And it's found twice in the in those three biographical narratives. So the fact that it was written in the perfect, it now I got goosebumps because it reinforced something that has been my interpretation, which is that the food statements were absolutely valid in terms of this you shouldn't eat because it's not safe. And there is a period of time where it has become safe, doesn't change, doesn't invalidate what Yahweh said. What Yahweh said is absolutely true. But there's a period of time we ought not make a be so dogmatic, and Yahusha said, eat what's put before you. So I find total harmony with that perspective. Consistency, harmony, and it's like, okay, I'm going to give you a simple instruction as a young child growing up in my family, and then once you're able to think these things through, I'm going to give you a more enlightened, more sophisticated, more grown-up approach to this, where your free will and your judgment is now going to apply. And that's what this means. So, anyway, it says, so you may actually and continually butcher zabah, dress for consumption, and also you may choose to completely consume. Now, the perfect can mean limited in time, but it can also mean totally and completely. So you can completely consume. Creatures, this would be basar. Basar is animals. It's the meat of animals. It's the flesh of animals. I don't think anyone's going to challenge that's an appropriate translation of bashar. It can be translated flesh, living things, meat, or animals. But Yahweh is talking about meat here because he talked about butcher. We do not butcher potatoes. We do not butcher salad. You know, we don't butcher fruit. He's talking about meat. We butcher meat. So these creatures, the flesh of living things, in connection with and consistent with, that's what Ka means. So we've come across Ka, folks, 1,000 times. In harmony with, consistent with, similar to, denoting a connection and association which shows an appreciation for these things in a relationship. Ka. And this is next is Baraka. Baraka is the feminine version of Barak. Barak is both a noun and a verb in Hebrew. Guys, what do you think Barak means? We've seen it a bunch of times.
When Yahweh says, typically it means to bless.
Right.
You know, to bow down.
Yeah. If it's Yahweh, and it, typically Barak is put in Yahweh's voice. And when Yahweh says that, like when he created Adam, he got down
he
on his
knees. He bowed down.
Yeah.
Bow is
probably
wasn't
not
religious veneration.
No,
he was bending down.
The right way to translate would be, he got down on his knees.
Yeah, right.
He
was bending down.
And the reason that he got down on his knees is that Yahusha is Yahweh on his knees. Yahweh getting down to our level. You know, when a father gets down to the same level as a child to lift the child up, they get down on one knee. And I was talking to the friend at a restaurant today, and I talked about meeting Arnold Palmer. And Arnold Palmer, when my eldest son walked up to me, I introduced Arnold Palmer to my son, and Arnold Palmer got down on one knee to look my son right in the eye. Loving thing to do. It's what you do if you're a big person and you want to relate to a little person and make the little person feel comfortable with you. And God's a really big person. We're really little people by comparison. So he gets down on his knee to lift us up. Loving father thing to do. Baraka is the feminine of that, which now this is the set-apart spirit, for example. If you want to look at the feminine of getting down on the knees, it's you know, a set-apart spirit lifting us up. So in conjunction and consistent with the blessing and superlative gift, baraka is the gift of kneeling down in love to lift someone up. And baraka is a gift. It's a the nature of a vow which results in reconciliation and the eternal benefits of the covenant relationship by the willingness to kneel down in love. That is as amplified as I can share baraka. You're free to just to translate it blessing if you want, but that's a more comprehensive definition of Yahweh your God. So this kneeling down in love and superlative gift is not what we're offering. It's what Yahweh's offering. Okay? Yahweh goes on record. The moment that he creates Adam, he gets down on his knee and love with Adam. It's Yahweh's getting down on his knee and blessing. So anything that we do, if it's in conjunction with that image of Yahweh acting like a loving father and approaching us that way, your God, which as a benefit of the relationship, Asher again, he has provided. Nathan. Nathan means he has given as a gift. He has produced. He has provided. What is God? Is there any animal that Yahweh hasn't provided? I mean, is there any form of life that he didn't provide? No, that's everything. He's provided everything. All right. That Yahweh has provided. He has provided. And any reasoned out and thoughtful conclusion in any city or town. Now, here I did take the time to tell you how many different ways you can render Ba Kol Sha'ar. Sha'ar is sometimes listed as a gated, within your gates, Ba means with or within. And so when you're dealing with Sha'ar, it can be in Kol, every Sha'ar gate. Now, I didn't render it that way, although I gave that as a potential meaning because of two things. One is it's not the primary meaning of the word. It doesn't fit here as well as other things would fit. But what it really means, if you want to take the within the gates approach, it's not that it's wrong. It's just that it's secondary. The gates meant a city. The cities were gated. A gate would be when the shepherds and their families and extended families were out on the range. They created an enclosure around them, and the entire extended family lived within a gated area. It also means the gates and doorway to your home. So this would be within your home. This could be within your community. This could be within the borders of your country. It could be any of those things as Sha'ar. If you want to translate Sha'ar as gate, your home, your community, your country. A gated area, protected area, of which there are ways to let people in. Now, Sha'ar's primary meaning is to reason, to draw a thoughtful conclusion. So what I chose to do here, William, was to be open to both ideas. And so I translated it as that Kol, which means any, Ba is in. So in any, and then Sha'ar, reasoned out and thoughtful conclusion in any city or town. Now, those are the two possible meanings of Sha'ar. I've included both. That way, if you would prefer thoughtful and reasoned conclusion, which I think is the vastly more preferable translation, and it's the primary translation of the word, or if you prefer in any city or town, or you can prefer both. So in any gated area or public place where people assemble for a living and by all means of thinking. So now he says you can eat, the unclean, ha teme, the impure, and also the clean, waha.
Yeah, this is where there was a problem. There were people thinking that you can eat whether you're clean or unclean. And they got into the aspect of if a person was unclean that day for whatever reason. I don't see it as talking about that because we're talking about spilling blood on the ground here in 16. So I think we're talking about an animal that we're eating. Don't think it's about a person.
Oh, you know, the verb is you can butcher and eat.
Yes.
Now, so the clean and unclean is otherwise he's saying, well, you know, you can eat whether you're clean or unclean. You can butcher whether you're clean or unclean. Listen, if you could only eat when you're clean, you could only butcher. You can't even butcher an animal, and because you're not supposed to touch a dead animal, right? You can't even butcher a dead animal and be clean. I mean, folks, I mean, I was going to go and bring this back up just to be certain that it can't be talking about the individual. But, oh, my goodness. I mean, that's a wrap. Okay, well, so there's no question in anybody's mind that the translation is accurate in terms of it's, by the way, it's ha tame here and waha ta'or. What does ha mean in Hebrew?
The.
That is correct. It means the. So, would Yahweh be speaking of somebody who wasn't clean and speaking of them as the, that he's speaking to, Moshe is now speaking to everybody that's gathered there about butchering and eating the unclean and the clean. Would you ever use ha if he's talking about if you are clean or unclean, you can butcher and eat? Would he preface it with a definite article?
No.
It makes folks. That is
well.
A,
that's
I mean, that,
that, that was the hoops being jumped through, and of course, what was being used again was what. A KJV translation. Now, I jumped in there because, see, I've got a problem.
Even in Hebrew English interlinears, it says the unclean and the clean. The unclean and the clean. It's not speaking of individuals here. It's the clean and the unclean addressing the bashar flesh that is being butchered,
consumed,
and eaten.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, wow. If that's the part that's tripping people up, man, then I wasted my time to go through this translation. But no,
right.
This is where I jumped in because
I said I have come to find that all religious translations, or at least 99% of them, are wrong. They are misleading. They're purposely misleading. They're always misleading. And I think it's done purposefully most of the time.
I don't know how anybody could translate the ha in front of both of these two words. Ha tame means the unclean.
Yeah, she...
There's really no other way to translate, and
in addition to the clean or the pure. I mean, JP, I mean, you spent a lot of time translating Hebrew. Is there any possibility that those are mistranslated or that they are applying to something other than the bashar flesh that we are being allowed to butcher and to consume?
From what I've seen of it, I haven't done a real in-depth on it yet. I've got it on my to-do list, but no, especially like you said, if it's hog, there's no other way to translate
right.
That.
Would God have said, for example, would God have said that, you know, if you are clean or if you are unclean, that you may still butcher and eat. Wouldn't he have used the pronoun? and wouldn't he have put in a verb?
Yeah.
This is not a verb. There is no pronoun. There is no pronoun. This is not a verb. It's not talking about a, you know, there's no are. Whether you are clean or unclean, you know, are in Hebrew would be haya. You know, whether you exist, and it would have to be the pronoun you, and then it would have to be exist as clean, or you haya as unclean. You exist as, you are, would be the verb haya. Does the verb haya appear here? Once,
no.
Much less twice? And there's no pronoun here. Now, I don't want to be dogmatic, because I will tell you for certain I possess absolutely no skill. I possess no credentials. I don't claim to be right. I've made a gazillion mistakes. And I think that's all important to recognize here. But, folks, and I'm telling you, I will always tell you, I'll always shoot straight with you on where there are options and where I have walked through the various options and included multiples of them or chosen one over another. I've always been open and straight with everybody that reads and listens to these programs and read these books. Folks, there is no other way to translate this. It's the clean and the unclean, and it's addressing the flesh.
The animals being butchered
and eaten.
Simple as that.
And eaten.
We're not
and
pouring
eaten.
The blood of out on the ground of clean and unclean people. I want to say something here, and I mean this. There is a group of individuals that get rocked every time you tell them their book named after the sun goddess Biblia is highly inaccurate. There is a group of people out there that just can't walk out of Babylon. They got to hold on to some cornerstone of some religious belief.
Yeah, okay. I did not engage in this to be confrontational. I don't want to be. And I just
no,
all
I'm,
I want to
I'm not
say
looking
here,
to be either. I'm just
yeah,
I'm,
yeah,
I'm making
okay.
a point that I've seen a thousand times. And quite frankly, I'm not going to put up with it. I don't put up with that trash. It's just trash to me.
So this says emphatically that so long as you're thoughtful about it, in your home, your town, or your city, you can eat, you can butcher, and you can eat the clean and the unclean animal. That's what this says. It's unequivocal. Now, there is more to it than that, and let's go ahead and finish the rest of it. But up to this point, it is unequivocal. There is no place here where there's a different rendering of these words that you can somehow use to make this going. And I'm going to tell you something else. I did look for this in the Dead Sea Scrolls, and it's not extant. And so somebody could say, well, it was changed. Well, let me tell you about changing from the Dead Sea Scrolls to the rabbinic Masoretic. The changes appear when the text is in conflict with an aspect of the rabbinic Judaism religion. If a text is in conflict with rabbinic Judaism, and this text is in conflict with rabbinic Judaism, in fact, this text destroys rabbinic Judaism, the very basis of its formation. And you see a statement from Yahweh that is in wholesale conflict with the authors of the Masoretic text. The likelihood of them changing it to make it in opposition to their religion is nil. Do you follow me on that? This was not copy-edited. To make
they
Yahweh
don't change things to hurt themselves.
Right, destructive
no.
of their religion. Okay? All right. Now, it goes on to say, this is now, he made the point, but he's adding something to it. Consistent with, ka. Ka means consistent with. The beautiful, shabi, the desirable and valuable, and the glorious. Now, here I took a lot of time last week and said that there are those who have twisted somehow, and I don't know how they get there, but they render this word as buck, and they render the next one as stag. Now, I don't know how they get there, because the primary meaning of shabby is beautiful, desirable, valuable, and glorious. And I put all of them, you know, in the parentheses, you'll see, I put in there, or the buck. But I don't know what the difference is in a buck and a stag, personally. I don't know why Yahweh would speak of the buck and the stag when the buck and the stag are both clean. Neither is unclean. So why even mention them?
And
if he's going to say you can eat the buck or the stag, he didn't need to add anything. To eat the buck and the stag would not be an exception. So
yeah. The dictionary I'm looking at right now, I just finally got logos to pull up.
Yeah.
It actually lists that Sabi is a gazelle.
Yeah. You know how many gazelles there were in the Sinai and Israel? By the way, I realized there is one dictionary that listed
yeah,
as a gazelle. Most every place else was buck.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing in most of them. Yeah, I did see one that listed as gazelle.
Right,
but
one listed as a gazelle.
I'm seeing that.
Right, and by the way, the only reason it would list it as a gazelle is because there's a translation out there that somebody chose gazelle. And, you know, they didn't have any idea what it was, so they just chose gazelle. And if you want it to be gazelle or buck, you can have at it, but, you know, why would you list a gazelle or buck? Because it's not an exception. So, the word shabby, there, if you look at its root and you look at words that are related to it, it means desirable and valuable, glorious, beautiful. And in harmony with, waka, and then the next one is al. And they've got AL here as the stag. AL is one of the more most common terms in Hebrew to associate Yahusha, the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, with everything that is symbolically important. AL is the leader. It's the lamp. It's the mighty pillar. It's the doorway. It's the protective covering. It's the source of power. It means strength. It conveys vigorous life, or the stag. Now, I'm telling you, you can choose. If it's stag, it's not an exception. Why is he telling us this? And if he's speaking of the AL, which is the Passover lamb, which is the lamb that Yahweh provided for Abraham, so in substitution for Yishak, it's the mighty pillar. It's the doorway that represents Passover on which the lamb's blood was shed. It's the protective covering. It's a really powerful term in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. When you see AL, and this might be the only place you could, even in tortured definition, call it a stag. It's the lamb. And the lamb, by the way, is desirable, valuable. The lamb is glorious. And he may genuinely and consistently be nourished by him. Now, who is the him here?
Yahusha.
It's not them, it's him, singular. Who's the him?
That would be Yahweh.
Yeah, the Yahweh. Lamb, the leader, mm-hmm. The upright pillar, the doorway, the protective covering, the source of power and strength.
That's right.
The one that is glorious and beautiful. And so,
him isn't a stag,
you know, you're being,
either.
No matter what we eat, so long as we're thoughtful about it, we're being nourished by Yahweh.
That's what I get. I get that. You know,
yeah.
I really get it. There's
and then it
whole...
says only. Then it says here, and I think it says this for the reason that he killed one religion with you can eat whatever you want. He killed another religion with only the blood you should not consume. Upon the ground,
yeah.
You should pour it out
as
water.
Water.
Yeah, because that's Roman Catholicism, Christianity, the being included in the Eucharist and doing the Eucharist where the wine is magically transformed into blood. You know, is the if you're excluded from the Eucharist, you're excluded from the church. Your soul's going to die and go to hell in Roman Catholicism. So, I think he's talking.
He just
butcher,
took a swipe
want,
at
just,
a couple
but,
religions. There
yeah,
is what it looks like to me, and since
yeah.
that would be totally in line with Yahweh not
yeah.
being a religious deity
right.
too.
Yeah, yeah,
you know.
So that's the translation. I don't know what else I can add to or clarify there. I guess if you're going to be mad at me for sharing that translation, you're going to be mad at me. The only thing I'd say is if you've got a what you think is a more accurate translation and a reason for it, please share it. And if you point out something that I've missed, boy, I'm going to be the happiest guy in the world, because then I'll be able to correct something I've said that's wrong. So please do that. I would prefer, however, that you don't associate a church with my effort to share Yahweh's testimony as accurately as I'm capable of doing it. Fair enough? All right. We do. Boy, we have we've got all of 8 minutes left. Here, I did spend this afternoon.
Sorry to have you do that, and I think you were doing it a lot for my benefit, and I appreciate that. But
I am your yes man, Larry.
Yeah, I know.
I am here to stand behind.
I know that.
We actually do have a very good relationship, but there is one thing you if you knew the private communications that Larry and I have. There is no time at all that Larry could ever be considered my yes man. I am more inclined to capitulate to his view than he is mine. And the only place that we typically differ is that while I'm willing to kick the hornet's nest, I'll only kick it if it's thrown in my direction. I won't go out looking for it. And I will give up far more quickly than Larry was. He's more tenacious than I am. I withdraw when the disagreement gets to be name calling and it's amongst family. If the disagreement is from within, I withdraw, and the reason I withdraw and I do not engage. Like, I have not mentioned anybody's name, and I've not confronted anything here other than I've told you if you disagree, you're free to disagree. Just please tell me where you think my translation was wrong, why you think it's wrong. Send me an email on it, and tell me why you think the conclusion from those words is errant. And I'm happy to work it through with you on that basis, but not if you're going to demean me. And I don't mind being demeaned by a atheist, an agnostic, a religious person, a Christian, or a religious Jew. I don't mind being demeaned by them. I have hundreds of thousands of those, and none of them ever influenced me. I've never lost a moment's sleep on them. I don't like being demeaned and wrongfully portrayed within the family, from within. That is hurtful to me. And you may say, okay, so you got thin skin. No, I did 2 hours of radio this morning. I devoted another two and a half hours in preparing for this program tonight, none of which we covered because I was focusing on improving my translations on Mizmor Psalm 119, starting in verse 163. And so I spent this afternoon trying to improve my translations to make them as accurate as I could. My motivation for doing that is that I enjoy sharing. I enjoy our relationship. I enjoy our group. I enjoy us learning together and exploring Yahweh's word together. But man, if I'm going to be attacked all week, it takes all of the joy out of it. And if it's not fun, I'm not going to do it. So I'm just telling you that's the one place I do have thin skin. And call me selfish, but if it ain't fun, I'm not going to devote 5 hours of my day to 6 hours of my day to doing it.
Well, I don't hang out on FB that much to see what would happen like that. But if anybody's attacking you, I think that's kind of crossing the line. I mean, in fact, it is crossing the line, and it's cowardly because in reality, anybody who has a beef with you can simply call up.
Yeah.
Call up the show. Call up SM. Call here.
Right. Write an email.
So that's
shoot an email.
Not hard to find. Yeah, not hard to find. But and I don't even mind if they are critical of me. I'm probably the most critical of me. I mean, I'm constantly saying I'm a flawed individual. That's kind of the fun thing about being with Yanoa is that he only works with flawed individuals, and so you can never brag about conveying Yanoa's message, because if you're working with Yanoa to convey his message, you are by definition flawed, because he likes working with flawed people. And so... we're the most flawed of all, and I fully acknowledge that I'm flawed and imperfect and capable of mistakes, and anybody that says that, all I'm going to do is agree with them. But if you're going to take the approach of Church of Yada, come on.
The one thing no one can accuse you of is not admitting when you're wrong. As many times as you've had to rewrite entire books, thousands of pages, because you realize you were wrong. Yeah, this is presented. You realize I'm wrong. I
got
to go change this now. Yeah. You're willing to do that every step of the way.
Correct.
Yeah, and outside of knowing you as a person, Yada, I mean, it's, you know, that's one of the reasons I hang around is because, you know, you're real about that. You don't claim perfection at all.
And I'm almost never dogmatic. You know, this idea of, well, can you tell me exactly what this means or what your position is? Now, you know, my position's irrelevant. Here's what Yahweh says. And, you know, you're free to analyze that, interpret it. You can come to a different conclusion. We just ought not be dogmatic. We ought never go to the point we say that, you know, we're infallible, we're right, and it's our way or the highway. It's not that. You know, fathers don't do that to their children. They don't shut them down in that way. They don't make things rigid in that way. Now, are there a few things that Yahweh is absolutely black and white on that are absolutely dogmatic? Yes, circumcision happens to be one of them. Walking away from Babylon is one of them. Shamar, paying attention to, focusing on, examining his Torah is one of them. All right, next week we are going to return to the 119th Psalm. We're going to re-engage at 163. 163 is something that's very, very close to my heart. It means a lot to me because I have long since concluded that to love you must hate. And if you do not hate, you're incapable of love. And it is a love-hate relationship with the Torah and those who oppose the Torah and who promote deceit that Dod conveys. And these statements that he's going to share with us that are brought to us by the letter Shin, which means word, that which is nourishing, I think are extremely important. And they're right in my wheelhouse of conviction, so selfishly I love them too. And by the way, they're right in your wheelhouse, Larry. It's hating those who are hostile and being hostile to those who promote deception. And the reason is because Dod genuinely loves the Torah. So that's what we're going to focus on tomorrow. But, you know, I'm hoping that people were not bummed out that we went over the same passage as last week and end up doing it where we were even more open and comprehensive and diligent on closely examining, carefully considering every word. Nothing is,
you know,
ever
it is a beautiful thing to know.
Followed it, brought it back up, and chewed it up some more.
Yeah, we probably
yeah,
did.
We
regurgitated it, didn't
yeah.
we? You know, they that's so funny, JB. But you know, the animals that are listed as good for us to eat are those that chew their food and bring it back up and chew it again and bring it back up and chew it again, and really digest it, get every bit of nourishment out of it. And that's
and throughout Yahweh's words, he's always talking about intaking words like their food. He
yes.
does this all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
What
it is words
new
like
about
their food.
This?
Yeah, it's
word is nourishing.
You know, over
yeah.
and over, this metaphor
yeah.
is used constantly.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's true. Well,
it is true.
Yeah,
you know,
marvelous.
I guess we
stuff.
Also, I also found a little more separation too. So that's good too. You know, you're always
yeah.
separating yourself out. You're always doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's
and,
a good thing.
Right.
Well, I appreciate you going through it, Yada. Thank you. Thank you for going
oh, sure.
through it again.
Yeah, it's we're all learning. We're all Yah's children. We can all gain from closely examining and carefully considering what he has to say, and you will never waste your time when you're doing that. And particularly when your focus is on the Torah. And that's what we did for an hour and a half. So I'm really glad that we moved away from the big picture on this. And the big picture on this is the relationship between this is not good and this is good for you to eat to the big, the big picture on it, which is, what do the words actually say? How can we translate them so we understand them? How can we amplify them and consider them? And what are the potential meanings of each of these words so that we understand the Father's instructions?
Yeah, that's kind of important. I mean, yeah. you know, I mean, it's really important. And I have to tell you that, you know, the work you do in this area that you don't have to do, but you do because you enjoy looking at Yahweh's words and you're excited about sharing Yahweh's words,
yeah.
is not something that should be met with disdain from people who are family. You
yeah.
know, I could have a relationship, yeah. you know, I can have an honest relationship with a guy that had a BLT for lunch. But I can't really have a relationship with, say, a family member that runs around stabbing other family members in the back.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Particularly when the motivation for doing so, to demean a family member, was the family member's willingness to closely examine and carefully consider Yahweh's testimony, even if they got it wrong. So let's just say that I was wrong about every word in the translation. Let's just say I was. You still ought not associate somebody with a church for doing their best and making a mistake when their focus is on conveying Yahweh's testimony.
I agree. There's
not
a right way and there's a wrong way to confront people on that.
Correct.
You know, I've had guys that have never ventured out of a King James Version Bible, as an example,
yeah.
Knock your translations. And I've asked each and every one of them, where is it wrong? And
yeah.
do you know, for all their mouth, not one of them can tell me anything? Isn't that an amazing
yeah.
thing?
Yeah.
I mean, if I told somebody, as an example, they were loading a weapon wrong, I'd better be able to show them how to load it correctly.
Right.
You see?
Right.
Exactly.
You know, and
yeah.
and I generally don't speak up about something unless I know something about it.
Yeah. And I will tell you that in terms of wrong, if wrong could convey inadequate, incomplete, less than perfect, then I would tell you that every word of every translation I have ever conveyed is wrong.
Is imperfect. Yes.
Because I'm translating from a perfect language with imperfect tools, with an imperfect mind, into a very imperfect language. I mean, English is not a great language to convey Hebrew stems, moods, and conjunctions. It is a very, it's a huge challenge to convey Hebrew thought in English. And I don't think
it's as though all the life sucked out of the room.
Oh,
really,
right.
It is. It's,
right. So,
it is.
It's like you've sucked all the life out of the room when you're trying to convey Hebrew in English. And so, you know, there you go. If you want to claim that they are flawed, yeah, I agree. You know, I would love to have a perfect copy of the Torah placed inside me and a perfect understanding of the medium of the Torah, which is the is Hebrew, by Yahweh himself. I'd love to have that occur. But between now and then, we do the best we can.
Yeah, and again, you know, I don't want to sound, you know, hateful. I really don't. But I do want to be firm about certain things. And one of the things that should never be done is people in a public forum attacking family members who are trying to deliver messages to the best of their ability. And that's the problem I have. They can hate me, and that's fine. Apparently they do. I have no problem with that. I really don't care. I don't care. They don't butter my bread. You know, it means nothing to me, if the truth be told. But it does mean something to me when you're in a public forum, and I work a lot of hours
devoted to sharing what we've learned. Yes.
Yeah. And to have somebody trash it, you know, it's not. I don't claim to be the great translator. You know, I'm real out front about that.
Yeah,
but I am a thoughtful person.
To put it in the NFL terms, it's deflating.
Yeah, it's deflating. It's all
we share. We do this program to inflate. You know, it's about being inflated in terms of being filled with that which is nourishing and beneficial. That's why we do this. But to name call family members, that's deflating, and we ought not do it. It's just not a.
You know, I spend hours and hours trying to tell people how non-religious, how anti-religion, forget non-religious, anti-religion, Yahweh is.
Yeah.
And then
I think JB had a marvelous term to use, which was dogmatic. Rather than religious. Dogmatic means there's a real difference. Dogmatic means that you're imposing a dogma and you're claiming that your interpretation of that dogma is dogmatic, that it is
true no matter what.
That means dogmatic. Fathers are not dogmatic with their children ever. You know, when I have a child, I will tell. In fact,
good fathers aren't.
My wife occasionally was dogmatic, and I say, don't do that. That doesn't work with children. What you need to do with children is you explain what's good for them, and you provide a warning of what's not good for them, and you tell them, you know, that if you do this, everything that's our relationship's going to be good. You're going to grow. You're going to nourish. Everything's going to happen if you do it this way. This is the right way. It's good for you. And if you go over here and you choose to do it this way, you know, bad things can happen. There's consequences. And that's fathers aren't dogmatic. They don't say, you know, if you use that word, I'm going to smack you in the jaw and break it. No.
Well, let's hope not. Anyway.
No.
Yeah.
You know, if you eat your cake before you eat your lima beans, you're going to die.
Yes, it takes a real punk to do that.
You know, that's not the way fathers not the way the fathers teach. It's not the way they guide. I don't see where Yahweh is dogmatic. Now, there are places where Yahweh has requirements. He has specific requirements as it relates to participating in his covenant. But even in those requirements, he's not dogmatic. You know, he says, walk away from your country. Dogmatic would be, he'd list all the countries and say, that means that you can have no relationship with anything that is religious, political, you know, going on down, militaristic. That would be dogmatic, or else you're going to die instantly. That'd be dogmatic. Guidance is walk
away
from
that. I get it. That's laying down the law.
Right, laying down the law. Right, exactly.
I know, that you have to obey. I know.
Yeah, dogmatic.
Which
translation
is it that? I have a quick question. Is it the Masoretic text that has, I think, out of every 23 words, one word's wrong or something or mistranslated?
Oh, yeah. It's impossible to look at the entire Masoretic text because we don't have the entire Dead Sea Scrolls with the lone exception of Yashaya. With Yashaya, we have the entire book. We have the Masoretic in its entirety. We have Yashaya, Isaiah in its entirety. So that was the one.
And you got
book.
A 20% variation there.
So that was the one book where I could actually count, because I have my Dead Sea Scrolls Bible that shows me every variation. I could actually count the variations as words. It wasn't quite that high in Yeshayah. It was one word in 13. And now the one word in 13 though is misleading. That means that one word in 13 was changed. That does not account.
Yeah, then you've got vocalization.
Right. Then you got the errant vocalizations, which changes the meaning entirely, and there's many other ways that you can misconvey the text. But if you just look at words that they copy edited because they didn't like that word and they changed the word, it was one word in 13 in Yashaya. That's pretty significant.
That's a lot.
And then when you add to that.
Like one in seven words.
Right, where Yahweh's name, for example, they replaced it with the Lord. Now, that's not counting in the one in 13. Because they left Yahweh's name there, they just wrote Ha-Adonai above it. Actually, just Adonai, my Lord. And Adonai means my Lord. It doesn't mean the Lord. It's my Lord. And then you have the improper vocalizations after that. So it probably goes from being about 9% to very close to 20% by the time you think of the additions of writing my Lord above Yahweh's name and the inaccurate diacritical markings. It's a lot.
But you know what I've noticed, and I think it's more prevalent today than ever, is everything that opposes Yah seems to be good now. It's like people love
much,
is being
yeah.
wicked. You know, I label the pastor evil, and you'd have thought if I would have been standing in front of these people, some of them my family, they'd have took my head off. I mean, my biological family. I was like, wow, you know. You can't even voice your opinion.
They're arrogant where they're trying to make circumcision illegal.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Illegal.
Exactly.
Participate
illegal.
In the covenant, literally.
Yeah. Illegal.
And even the whole homosexual thing's out of hand. Like when I was a kid, you didn't see that the way it is today. Today, if you're straight, you look down upon.
That's
it's,
right.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Now homosexuality is being promoted. Yeah. You've heard me speak on this topic so many times where. I don't care if you're homosexual. I mean, some of my closest associates in business were homosexual, and my wife and I were very close to them. But my wife doesn't understand why anybody would be a homosexual. I don't understand. I don't have any of those yearnings. If I think about it myself, I find it really uncomfortable.
It's
somebody,
disgusting.
Yeah, well, that's my view of it, too. But if somebody chooses to be a homosexual, that is their choice. The thing that I don't like is when they promote it, which is what's happening today, they promote it as not only acceptable, but superior. That bothers me a lot. And where if you challenge that and say, no, it's abnormal and it's not superior, then you are publicly crucified and humiliated and degraded for having that view. So you know, I think we're in pretty good harmony with this. Yeah.
If you look at the laws of physics, you know, opposites attract, right? You put a positive side of a magnet, negative side of a magnet, they pull together. You go negative and negative, they want to stay away from each other, right? They repel. My thing is, if you want to put aside everything that you think you know or believe or whatever, just put that away. Even if you think you're religious, whatever, just look at it and use your common sense, right? If everybody was gay, How could we procreate? It's impossible.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yahweh's whole idea is men and women come together. They leave their parents. They become one, a family. They become husband and wife. They become mother and father. They conceive children. They raise those children. They come to appreciate the role of our Heavenly Father and spiritual mother as Yahweh adopts us into His family and raises us and teaches us and guides us. And so the whole concept of men and women coming together in marriage and a vow in marriage, which is a promise to be faithful to one another, and how important that is for the covenant, all of that is so helpful to understand who Yahweh is and what He's offering that Yahweh doesn't like that corrupted. And homosexuality corrupts it. And that really is Yahweh's only issue with it. It's just, so while somebody who has committed a homosexual act, should they cease to do so and they embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant, they can absolutely be part of eternity. But it's very hard to know Yahweh and come to love what He's offering and not be comfortable with His view of marriage and home and family.
Right. I mean, I think He only touches base on it a couple of times, a few times, it's unfathomable. It's not something you do, right? It's like,
yeah, and by the way, the places where He touches on it, He's touching on other things like incest and pedophilia and bestiality.
Yeah.
He doesn't exactly talk about
it. It's not in good company.
No, it's not. It's not in good company, William. No. But, you know, my view on it is, again, free will. If somebody wants to choose to do that, that's fine. I don't go around
judging
people.
Right, but don't indoctrinate our children with it. Yeah, that's what they're doing today.
When you teach it as being good, then you're misleading. You're taking people away from Yahweh.
Right. You know.
All right. Well, folks, William, it's been a long day. I am really glad that you brought us back to this and then told me the issue was on translation. I think that was made this conversation valuable, pertinent, useful.
Well, at least for me it was, Yada. You know, I can't speak for, Larry's in FB more than I am. And so I'm sure there was some battles in there and some ignorance being thrown around. And knowing Larry, I'm pretty sure he spoke his mind.
Oh, there were private message attacks. There was everything.
Yeah.
And frankly, these were people that literally attacked me for agreeing with you.
Yeah, I know.
I thought, these are the words.
Right. And by the way, the difference between me not going as far as you're going in terms of never wanting to speak to them again and the total isolation is that you notice when you first sent me this, I shared with you, I don't agree and I don't appreciate the style, the tone, but, you know, Larry, I don't want to engage.
They're dug in their position.
They're dug in their position.
But,
right. And,
but there's
and
no
I don't want to
their
engage
because they
bad,
can't obey the Torah.
Bad stuff happens, and I get really deflated when I engage in that kind of stuff. And so I just told you I don't want to engage. So the primary difference between where you are on this and where I am is that I chose not to engage. And when I don't engage, the hurt is a lot less than it is when you do engage. So if I had engaged like you did, I'd be PO'd just like you are.
That's just the way I am.
I'm not disagreeing with your position. It's just that I've chosen with those on the inside not to engage in an argument that begins with name calling. I'm never going to play. So if you, folks, for your listening, anybody listening to the archive, if you want to disagree with me, you are absolutely free to do so. James is one of those who has done it 100 times. If you want to disagree, I'm always open to it. Share what where you think I've made a mistake in the translation. Share with you where you think that I'm not viewing it as a whole and something else indicates otherwise. And we'll go through it together, and we'll try to understand it the best we can. But the difference between debating
in a rational fashion and having an emotional argument.
Yeah.
One is productive and the other is not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rather than name calling, why don't we agree to disagree? I mean,
yeah.
We're
you know, right. And James, like on, for example, on your timing on PSOC, I think a very good argument can be made for which your position. You've done it, and I think I've never heard you say that you think that the conclusion that I have is unsustainable by Yahweh's testimony. I think you can, depending on which passage, which reference you choose to emphasize, you can come to either one of those two conclusions. And I don't think we ever debated. You were never trying to sell me on your position. I was never trying to sell you on mine.
Are we talking about matzah, by the way, being a part of Pesach?
No, we both recognize that Pesach and matzah are inseparable.
What was your... I'm lost.
Paraphrase really quickly. James' position, and it's well substantiated in a number of passages, that the Passover lamb is slaughtered one
midway
day,
and through we eat the 14th
yeah.
day, and the meal would begin at the end of the 14th,
which is actually matzah. Right, so you're actually eating you're actually eating Passover dinner
on matzah.
So I mean, both of us realize
I've never even considered that
Passover and matzah are inseparable, and they're one and the same. And if you don't view them as one and the same, you know you're doing yourself great harm. So we're both in agreement. He has it so integrated that they're actually celebrated on the same day, and I don't agree with that, and that it's not the way Yosha observed it, and it's not as I read it. The next day is matzah. So we are in total agreement on everything that's important, including what those days represent and what they have to be integrated as one.
Since they're put there for the purposes of understanding.
Right. Right. So we're
right.
in complete agreement
that's
on everything.
The most important
it's
thing
just
there.
Right. It's just do you butcher the lamb on the 13th day as the 14th, 13th day at sundown is the 14th day. Do you celebrate the meal then, or do you prepare the lamb then and consume it on the 15th day, which is the end of the 14th day becomes the 15th day, and it's on matzah. And there are some places where, the description seems to indicate that, and. My conclusion was, and I think this is how we left it, James, was that because you can make a good case using Yahweh's testimony for either of those two conclusions, that you're not wrong with either of those conclusions, and it's there so that we cannot be dogmatic.
Well, why don't you guys send me your positions and maybe we can have a fight?
No. No.
I'd be happy to forward you the exchange. I'm not going to fight over it, though.
No.
But if you want to read it,
that was a joke.
Back and forth.
It was good back and forth. Yeah, it was. Yep.
I shared it on the forum, so it's up there too.
Yeah, I don't. And my guess is on the forum, you didn't have anybody saying, "Well, that Yada guy's a jackass," or "JB, you're a jackass." Yeah. No, and people were probably moved both ways. And my guess is that most people said, all right, that was an interesting discussion. I'm not sure now.
You know, I told you even more.
Pardon?
When I decided to do the social media thing to try to reach people, I mean, as simple as that, I look at it. Do you remember? I mean, the forum used to be, when I first looked at it, and this was many, many years ago, was the, and I don't go there often, so I don't know, but it used to be somebody would ask a question and it would be answered straight out of yada yada. Do you remember that? And so that's how I set it up. So I was never really the person answering anything.
Yeah.
You know, and I get the impression that, you know, and I could put the yada yada at the end of every post, you know, tag it, you know. It would get a little cumbersome since there's thousands of them, and it would start to look ridiculous. Why not just have them read?
Yeah.
And so I think that there were people that really got bummed out about that.
Yeah.
And it really shows. But it was just, it was a way to, you know, I used to do interactive TV. It was called News Talk Television, where I'd do live debates on television.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the number one political market in places like Philadelphia, New York, you know. And so I've had debates. I mean, I found mostly political actors and people, spin meisters, can't debate. They're always hiding.
Right.
And the reason we don't have to hide is because we're just simply representing the truth.
Right.
We don't have a religious axe to grind.
No. Just simply, this is what you always said. If you want to disagree with that, have at it. But we're not going to entertain you, discussion with you. If you're going to claim to speak for God and contradict what he has to say. I will tell you, Larry, that there was a time when about 90% of my email correspondence came from people who stumbled on yada yada or Prophet of Doom and therefore got to yada yada.
Yeah.
I would say now that somewhere around 80 to 90% of the correspondence I get, and I get a letter every week, sometimes multiple times a week, from somebody that says, you know, I've never written to you before, but years ago I came to know Yahweh based upon the translations that you have written. And, you know, I say, you know, we know you don't like to be thanked for it, but, you know, still, those translations profoundly changed my life because I understand Yahweh for the first time. And you know, I get one of those once or twice a week. At this point now, about 80% of them have either come through your Facebook contacts or through Richard's Bless Yahweh site.
Yeah, he does a lot of work. And the last thing I'm going to do, we've had a couple small disagreements on things, but I love Richard, and we're going to have a
Yeah, Richard and I have had some drag-out fights, but, Richard's good people. Richard's good people, but the fact is that Richard's doing it a different way than you're doing it. I'm doing it a different way than you're doing it. You're doing it a different way than we're doing it. But collectively, we're reaching a lot of people, getting them to think, coming to know Yahweh. This is good.
Right. That's the whole point. It isn't, I know more than you? You know, so many people, and I think this is a direct result of, just like I think atheism is a direct result of religion, there are so many people out there trying to show others what they know.
Yeah.
And what I find is most of them don't know very much to begin with.
Yeah, and one
love when you tell them, you say, you know what, go ahead and grab your Bible. I'm going to show you something in your Bible, right? And then you show them, like Jeremiah 10, right, when it speaks about the Christmas tree.
Right.
And then you say, you know, and I ask somebody in my family, if I show you that in your Bible, go get your Bible, because they always want to question the translation, right? And I go, and I point to their Christmas tree, and I go, if I show you where he talks about not doing that, will you stop? He just looks at me dumbfounded.
Or I'll tell somebody, uses any translations other than a standard, typical English Bible. That way they can't accuse her of, oh, you're just twisting the translation.
Right.
This is what's in the Bible you have in your hand.
Right.
And she'll bring it right up and throw it at them.
But I love Larry's statement, and I think this is your statement, Larry. Larry says they really don't believe. They really don't.
Oh yeah, they don't.
They don't even believe.
No, they don't.
Which is worse,
no,
right?
They don't.
I mean, they don't think this is real. But they,
no.
Right. They don't even believe that their Bible is true.
No,
because it's the truth.
And by the way,
you know, I've always said, you know, I did a post the other day about if at the Nicene Council, you know, had they got together and renamed Yahusha Bozo the Clown, would you still say the name with such fervor? Or, you know, if a popular translator who had all the credentials,
and by the way, at the Nicene
together
Council,
had called him Rumpelstiltskin.
They didn't come up with Jesus at the Nicene Council.
I know, it was Hesus. I said Hesus, by the way.
Yeah.
In the post.
Yeah, it was Hesus. Yeah.
And I put Druid Savior where the horned one is God.
Oh,
know,
yeah, the Nicene Council, that's what they came up with. It wasn't Jesus.
It was a vote, baby.
It was
a vote.
Hesus Christu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
Hesus beat out Bob.
Yeah, and of course, what did Yahusha say about the Nickelodeons, which would be those who are fond of the Nicene Council, which is, you know, the Greek god of victory. You know,
I love it when it all fits together.
And boy, when you understand. And by the way, that's the thing I was going to make the point that I wanted to make, and that I need to go, guys. But I've always said. That I don't know as much as many other people know, and that, you know, if the determination was made that you have something worthy to say or you don't based upon how much you know, I would never open my mouth. There's always somebody that knows a lot more than I do on any subject, including the Torah. But knowing, while important, is not nearly as important as understanding. And once you come to understand who Yahweh is, what he's offering, what he wants, what he expects, that understanding is so powerful that it enables you to speak about Yahweh in any circumstance, no matter what the other party may know. Like Larry was having a conversation with the rabbi who was fluent in Aramaic.
Expert.
But the difference is, well, that expert might know more than Larry knows. Larry understands,
yeah,
and the rabbi doesn't. And understanding is what it's all about. Yahweh's teaching, his direction, his guidance is to help us understand. And understanding is very powerful. Maybe the single most powerful thing in the universe is understanding.
Oh, when he told me what an expert he was just before I left, I said, I'll mention that to Yahweh, and maybe you should too. I'm sure he'll be impressed.
Yeah. You know, there is a common thread amongst all of those who know and love Yahweh through his Torah, and that is none of us claim to be experts. We don't. None of us claim
there's
to be.
There's not a credential among us, does.
No, there isn't a credential among us. But yeah, I tell you what, there's a lot of joy, a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of enlightenment, a lot of fun, a lot of joy.
It works to our benefit, by the way. Yeah. And when Yahusha showed up, he didn't run up to the temple and get the learned scribes.
No,
he went down
not.
To the river. And he got the fisherman. I know what happened
there.
Know exactly why that was.
Of course.
There we go.
There we go, folks. And there I go. But that is the bottom line there. He went out and got the fisherman and the tax collector.
Yeah.
You know?
And
he got, the people he got were passionate. They were passionate.
Yes,
they were hilarious. They were willing to engage. You know, old Shimon Kefesh, I'm going to go cut off his ear.
I'll leave you with one to think about, Yada and JB and Larry. When Yahusha in Matanya, it was Matanya. When he went to pray and supposedly he sweat blood. Did that really transpire?
Oh,
is that
boy.
In the oldest Koine Greek?
I don't know. You can send me the passage. I'll look it up for you and to see if it is in Matanya. And I'd have to look it up for you. But I can tell you that what it conveys doesn't bother me. This idea of knowing that he was going to be set apart from Yahweh, he was going to be sent defenseless into Sheol, carrying all of the sins that mankind has ever committed, and that his physical body was going to be tortured, and he would feel every stripe and every aspect of that torture. While I think that what it conveys, if it is true, is that the physical manifestation of Yahweh, the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, felt every blow, felt every lash, felt every nail, felt every bit of anguish, and that was the easy part, what happened on Pesach. And so I can see, knowing which he knew what was going to happen, that he'd sweat blood. Yeah, man, I can see it being that kind of anguish.
Just did a quick check. It's actually in Luke, and it's only in Luke.
Then it may not be true. Yeah, then it may not be true. But if it is
true, because the first thing,
true,
the first red flag for me was the how would he know what he was praying if he says that if you choose to pray, pray alone, right? So why would anybody be documenting his prayer?
Yeah, well, that's true.
There we go again.
All right. That's it. That's my, by the way, my whole thing.
Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. God is consistent. When you find an inconsistency, that's man, not God. Hey, Willie. Great job.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
See you next week.
Shabbat shalom. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.